Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates one episode at a time the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which ran on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us once again in the VIP tent is Major Sean Myers. Hi, Sean. Welcome back.
Kelly, I've been hearing some things about your surgeons.
You know, we're the best cutters in the business, and what are you going to do about it?
At ease.
Thank you. We're here to talk about Season 1, Episode 19, The Long John Flap, which originally aired on February 18th, 1973, written by Alan Alda and directed by William Weor. Now, of course, Sean, you have been on the show before, so we know your secret origin when it comes to MASH. So we're going to get right into the plot of this episode. The 477th is going through a brutal cold snap, and everyone in the camp is freezing to death, except Hawkeye, who is toasty because of a pair of long johns he got from home. He's busy lording it over Trapper, who is even more miserable because of a cold. Trapper's whining becomes so pathetic that Hawkeye can't take it anymore, and he gives his long johns over to his bunkmate. Later, Trapper uses the long johns as a bet in a poker game, positive that he can't lose, except that he does, and when he learns that Radar has four tens. Hawkeye can't believe it. News of the long johns spread through the camp, and Radar manages to parlay his ownership of them into a date with a gorgeous nurse. But his stomach is bigger than his libido, and he trades the long johns to the cook for a whole leg of lamb complete with mint jelly. The cook then trades the long johns to Frank Burns in exchange for not getting reprimanded by Burns for having a dirty kitchen. Burns, in turn, gives them the hot lips when he admits he has them, and she flat out demands he gives them up. Later, they are stolen from Hot Lips by Klinger, who has to endure the cold outside while he's on sentry duty. But he feels so guilty about stealing that he confesses to Father Mulcahy and turns the long johns over to him. Father Mulcahy, after enjoying one solid night of toasty sleep, turns them in to Henry, since it's the proper thing to do. Henry promises to conduct an investigation to see who the proper owner is, but first, he's going to try the long johns on himself. Hawkeye and Trapper discover Henry as he's road testing the long johns and demand their return. Just at that moment, Henry's appendicitis flares up, so he needs surgery immediately. Even though he's in massive pain, he instructs the doctors to be careful not to cut the long johns. After the surgery, Hawkeye is toasty once again in his long johns. Both Trapper and Radar try to guilt Hawkeye into giving them up again, but he's having none of it. So, okay, Sean, why did you want to talk about this episode?
I love any TV show, movie, anything like that, where you follow the path of one item that goes from one character to another, to another, to another, to another. I love that concept. I love that plot device. I just think it's great.
All right. I will admit, for the longest time, I had a tough time with this episode, mainly due to one scene, which we'll get to in a moment. But when I rewatched it for this recording, I actually liked it a lot more than I remembered, and it really is just the one scene that bothers me. It's interesting that this is the first episode to be written by Alan Alda, the first of many, many, many episodes that he would go on to write. But it's sort of funny that this is only two shows after Sometimes You Hear the Bullet, which of course was a landmark episode, yet this is a very silly show. And I almost think, was this MASH's way of sort of mollifying CBS, like saying, okay, 2 weeks ago, we did this really heavy one, but now we're going to do this really goofy one. So don't worry, we could do some goofy stories. But it's sort of funny that it was written by Alan Alda, of all people, who, you know, went into the show with the idea that that MASH would not be Abbott Costello Goes to War, and yet he wrote one of the silliest episodes of the first season.
And depending on how you look at it, it's either a blessing or a curse that we know what MASH became. So it's a little unfair to look back and say, oh, well, this wasn't as fantastic as, you know, a season 6 or a season 9 episode. I mean, this is still season 1. And most shows, even great shows, during their first season, they're still trying to find their footing. They're trying to find, you know, what are we going to say? What can we say? What are we allowed to say? And until you're a hit on network, you are kind of beholden to the network.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I said, I'm sure this is the kind of the show that CBS wanted every week, was this hijinks at the front kind of thing. I do find it funny that in the first scene where we see Hawkeye outside in the winter with Trapper, and Trapper's freezing, and he's walking around and he's acting like he's not remotely cold, he still doesn't have a winter hat on or wearing a winter coat or even gloves. And I mean, I wear long johns during the winter because I'm a big wuss, but it's like, you're still cold. Like, you know what I mean? Like, your hands are still cold, Hawkeye. He's acting like he's in this, like, permanent heat bubble or something.
My literal note is, those sure are some warm long johns.
Yeah, this must be like electric long johns. I mean, he must be really like setting them on fire. It's kind of amazing. And they just, again, they become this sort of talisman that go from person to person. And I like that they become so revered that you don't even have to have them on. That Radar carries them around in a brown paper sack, and people touch them like it's a Rosetta Stone. They're like, oh, these long johns. And Hawkeye even has a line. He says, by the time he's done, it's just going to be a ball of lint left.
And it's funny, the scene where he is with the girl and he's, you know, boasting about the long johns, that's, at least so far in the series, that's the most, like, playa kind of behavior from Radar.
That's the scene that drives me up a wall in this episode. Because, okay, after he makes time with the nurse, which is Nurse Beddoes, played by Kathleen King, by the way, whose last credit is in 1980. But I'm going to get to that in a second. There's something very interesting about Kathleen King. But after he makes time with Nurse Beddoes in the mess tent, and he goes over to the cook, and the cook literally says to Radar, "You're some guy, Radar. What's your secret?" And then Radar responds, "I like to put them on a pedestal, make them feel special, give them little gifts." And I'm like, what Radar is this that he's talking like you say, he's a player. I'm like did Earth 2 Radar beam in from another planet? What's happening? This scene is so out of left field. And the fact that, A, it doesn't match with any Radar that we've seen to this point, and that it was written by Alan Alda is completely bewildering to me.
I agree. It's odd.
It feels like this would have been like an episode 4 of the show back when they were still writing Radar as – you know, again, more like an operator. I can't. This scene is so strange that, again, that the cook turns to Radar for advice, and that Radar is dispensing it like he's, you know, writing for Maxim or something. It's just so. I always wonder, like, when the actors get stuff like this, do they pipe up? Maybe if you're in the first season and your show is teetering on the brink of cancellation, you don't say anything. You know, you just take the script. But I got to wonder, did Gary Berghoff read that and go, what is this? What Radar is this?
I absolutely agree with what you said. 100% I agree. However, what he does after he gets the leg of lamb, which I'll get to in a minute, I think that's perfectly in character with Radar, how he just, once he gets his leg of lamb, he doesn't even try to make time with the girl at all. He doesn't try anymore after getting the leg of lamb. He's just out.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, he gives
see
up
later, baby.
Yeah, he gives up a guaranteed night with the nurse just so he can eat a leg of lamb. So that is a very Radar-like thing, I will admit.
I thought for sure he would come back and say, oh, you know, I don't have the long johns, but I do have this leg of lamb that we can share. And then she would storm off. Nope, he just wants his leg of lamb.
Yeah. As we've established, he loves the food there. I do got to wonder, like, the cook really probably could have gotten even more for a leg of lamb and mint jelly. I mean, that'd be probably pretty valuable there at the 477th.
Well, that's in my notes, too. Why does he have an entire leg of lamb just sitting there?
Yeah, and he's not giving it to anybody. Everybody's eating the slop on the trays, and yet there's this roast lamb sitting there, presumably, you know, smelling pretty good in the mess tent, and nobody's touching it. That's very strange.
Yeah, I didn't understand that part at all.
Yeah. As I mentioned, Kathleen King plays Nurse Beddoes. She had a bunch of TV credits. She was an Ironside Marcus Welby policewoman. It's weird, though. If you go to her IMDb page, there's a longer history of this woman whose credits stop in 1980 than like there is for like George Clooney. And I have to wonder, does Miss King manage her own IMDb page? I know that some celebrities do. Some of them do manage their own page, because it's like it gets into like her personal history, the fact that she loves yoga. And you're like, no one's heard of this person. Why is there so much history about Kathleen King? But they said maybe he's either a big Kathleen King fan or somebody in Miss King's family. Joseph Perry plays the cook. He appeared in shows like The Untouchables, The Twilight Zone, Murder, She Wrote, Seinfeld, Alf, Cheers. Hey, Ryan. Barney Miller, Hello, Larry, with McLean Stevenson. So, I mean, he had quite a longer. I mean, his TV career starts all the way back into the golden age of television, goes all the way into, like, the 2000s. So this was his only appearance on MASH.
Yeah, he was so odd. Just his performance seemed more like a Catskills comedian.
Yes. I do like the interchange he has with Frank, where he talks about, he says, "You can't bust me, sir. My wife needs the money." He says, "Didn't your wife die?" And he goes, "She got better, sir." And, you know, and then he talks about when Frank is disgusted by how dirty the kitchen is. And he's like, you know, only one person's ever gotten sick. Do you feel better now, sir? I like that gag.
It's good timing on that line. I agree with that.
I do wonder, though, when you see, I mean, this is something they've never addressed in all 251 episodes of the show. We see the kitchen, right? And this is only one of, I'd say, you know what, maybe half a dozen times we see the actual kitchen of the 477th. Isn't it clear that the kitchen is not connected to the mess tent in any way?
It seems like it's far away from the mess tent.
Why would you build it that way? Why would you? I mean, think of all the extra legwork you have to do to schlep all that food from the kitchen all the way into the mess tent. Because we see the, I mean, we see the mess tent from every angle over the course of 11 years, and it's clearly a freestanding building. It's not attached. In fact, I'm not even sure where that kitchen is. Like, where? What building is that kitchen in?
It, like, I think the wall. I think practically, like, in terms of the set. I think it's actually Henry's office that they redressed.
I think so, yeah.
Because the walls look like the walls of Henry's office.
Like the wood paneling and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, it's they never gave you a diagram of the 477th in any real way, so you can never figure out. I mean, we always hear about the supply tent. We've seen the supply tent in some episodes. You never quite know where that is. We heard there's a dispensary. Which is you know, probably too gross for us to ever see, but we know that that building, we know that there's a dentist at least through some point at the 477th, so we never see that either. So, but yeah, it's funny when you see the extensive kitchen here, and you're like, where is this? Where does this thing exist? I love the moment where they play the card game and Trapper loses the Long Johns to Radar, but I love the fact that they are that Hawkeye and Trapper are honest with Radar, because Radar doesn't realize that he has a winning hand, because he says he has two pair, which of course Trapper thinks is a losing hand. And he goes, no, he goes, tens. Tens in what? Just tens. So he has four tens. But Radar doesn't know that that's a winning hand, but Hawkeye and Trapper own up to that. I really, that's very sweet, because they could have kind of like cheated Radar if they wanted to not give up the Long Johns.
It's funny, throughout television history, how poker is presented. I have no idea how to play poker. I don't know the first thing about poker. I don't know what's a winning hand. I only know the terms from TV. But I can always tell what is good and what is bad by the people's reactions.
Right, right. Yeah, when he says, he says, I have two pair, two tens, just tens. And then Trapper looks flummoxed. He just can't believe that he's lost this. And I like that that's a recurring bit through the series with Trapper. The Trapper always ends up losing these big hands. There's another episode in season three where he loses a big hand, and Hawkeye even remarks upon. He's like, you have a knack for losing. So that's something they repeated with Trapper throughout the years, which I enjoy quite a bit. I do love also the sequence with Frank and Hot Lips, where he talks about that in the winter, his fingers crack open at the slightest bit of cold. And Margaret just goes, don't be disgusting. I just love the way she says, like, she just doesn't want to hear his problems. And for someone who hates cold weather like I do, and I actually do have that, my hands get all dry. It's like, I sympathize with Frank, but I just love how dismissive Margaret is. Like, don't be disgusting, Frank.
Obviously, everyone in the cast is great, but Hot Lips, her voice in the cold was fantastic. It was making me cold because of the way she pitched her voice.
Oh yeah, I mentioned in the previous episodes of like when Margaret does a great drunk voice as well. Loretta Swit, she did do comical voices, but you feel like she's all bundled up because she has like all the winters. She kind of talks like she's pitched a little. It's very, very funny, and I love that. Everybody bargains to get the Long Johns or gets cheated, but Margaret just simply bullies Frank out of them. There's no bargaining there. She simply demands them, and he gives them up.
And she doesn't give up the Long Johns. They're taken from her.
Right, yes. Nobody's going to bully Margaret around. It's up to Klinger to steal them. By the way, we see a Life magazine in Margaret's tent. That Life magazine is from 1967. So once again, it's a prop that is out of date. It's probably similar. Probably came out of the same magazine pile that Radar's Avengers comic book came from, because they're all from they all seem to be from the late 60s. The scene with
I can tell you one thing: Radar can get anything from Sparky.
That's true. Yeah, he's got connections all the way up to the Yalu, as they say. I like the scene with Father Mulcahy and Klinger, where Klinger's out there freezing to death. And like, it's funny you said, like, how Margaret makes you feel like the way she talks makes you feel cold. I really feel for Klinger because he's out there in his like his whack uniform with bare legs, and we established that the Korean winters are brutal, and you're like, the things he has to appear crazy. Like, I just look at him and I start to shiver because I'm like, oh my God, that poor guy is, he's got to be dying.
He is committed to that bit.
Yeah. And he mentions too, to Father Mulcahy, he says, nobody takes me seriously. I'm getting tired of that. It's like, well, you're going to have to put up with it for another 9 seasons, Klinger.
But I love the fact that he says, only God knows where they are now. And then the scene cuts to Father Mulcahy. That's right. Fantastic.
Yeah, and then the scene they have across the netting where Klinger's like, I hear explosions and I hear this sound. And Mulcahy's like, I hear it too. And Klinger's like, I'm worse off than I thought. I was making all that stuff up. That's a great – they have a – Jamie Farr and William Christopher had a great sort of comic rhythm together.
Yeah.
They, of course, appeared in a movie together before they ever did MASH. They appeared in a Doris Day movie called Please Don't Eat the Daisies, where they play hippies, which is hysterical if you ever see it. If you have a chance to,
oh my God.
To see
I've
it.
I've seen that years ago, 20 or 30 years ago, and never even realized.
Yep, they play hippies. It's and Herb Voland, who plays General Clayton, is in the movie too. He doesn't have any scenes with them, but so you got 3 MASH actors in that. It's very, very funny. I do find it interesting the way that McLean Stevenson says the word abdomen.
Yeah.
He says abdomen. And I think that the first couple of times I saw the show, I literally didn't know what he was talking about. I'm like, what's an abdomen? I don't know what that is.
I forget. There's either a Cole Porter song or a George Gershwin song where they pronounce it that way. And that's
really?
The only reason why, that's the only reason why I know that.
I've never heard that. It's completely bewildering to me. I was like, it's abdomen, Henry. It's abdomen. What are you talking about? As I mentioned, this episode was directed by William Wiard, who did Sometimes You Hear the Bullet, Tuttle from this season. He did LIP. In the second season, he did 3 more. He was a really solid director. And you can see anybody that could handle this show and also do Sometimes You Hear the Bullet shows he was pretty diverse. You know, he could handle wildly swinging tones within the same show, because this does have a real good comic energy. As you mentioned, it is fun watching them go from bit to bit to bit. They would do an episode later on in season 2 where Hawkeye has to get a new boot, and he has to trade favors to get a new boot. And it's a similar style. If he goes from this person to this person to this person. It's a durable comic premise to do that, to just sort of go through the tent and meet all the different characters as everybody wants something from the next person.
I think it's neat. And I think it's a way to look at each character, you know, how they are, how they're willing to get something, what they're willing to do for it. I think it's a neat way to look at each character.
Yeah, there's a there was a movie in the 90s, I remember, called $20, where it follows a $20 bill that goes from person to person to person. And it was like this sort of all-star cast kind of thing where it would like this person got it and they would spend it and then it would follow this person. So each actor is in the movie for like 7 minutes and it would just be this $20 bill. So it's going from person to person to person. So it's a premise that you really kind of can't go wrong with. Do you have a particular favorite joke from this episode?
I do. And it's so obvious, and they even talk about it being obvious, but I love when Trapper says, "War is making me sick." And then Hawkeye says, "Well, next time stay out of the draft."
I love it. And he laughs at his own joke too. I love when Hawkeye laughs at his own joke.
But it's funny when we're talking about lines, and I don't want to cut you out of your line, but there's an obvious bad edit point during the episode. Like, did you notice this?
At what point?
So when Hawkeye throws Trapper his long johns.
Right. He's like, some people don't have any consideration. And he pulls him off under his blanket and throws him at him.
And then you see Trapper have the long johns and then rewatch it. And you can see Trapper opens his mouth because he's going to say something, but then it cuts away.
Oh, I never noticed that. Oh, that's funny. Huh. Okay. I wonder what that line was supposed to be. That's interesting.
That's what I wonder, too. It must not have been funny.
Yeah, I guess I've always wondered about that. There must be MASH deleted scenes, right? I mean, they couldn't possibly have shot these shows exactly to length. They must have shot a little over. And the box set, the Martinis and Medicine box, doesn't feature anything like that. But that footage must exist somewhere. At least there must be, after 251 episodes, there must be some deleted scenes that we never got to see.
There definitely are.
Yeah, I mean, there are bloopers. We know there are bloopers because we've seen those. But, my mind reels at the idea that, like, you know, wow, there could be, like, MASH footage we haven't seen. My favorite line, actually, there's a bunch of really funny lines. But I like the one where when Henry is walking out of his office and he's about to get surgery and he's hunched over in agony. And Hawkeye says, by the way, I loved you in Duck Soup. I love that Hawkeye was like doing reference humor way before Dennis Miller ever did it. I really enjoy that. We know that Alan Alda does a really good Groucho Marx. He did it in Bennett and did it in Yankee Doodle Doctor, and he does it in other episodes. But I like that's an ongoing thing that Hawkeye is just a big fan of the Marx Brothers.
I have that written down because you often talk about like the quote unquote timestamps of the episodes, how they refer to pop culture of the time. So obviously them talking about the Marx Brothers would be fantastic. And I also love when Trap is acting sick and Hawkeye says, courage, Camille.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, kids definitely don't know what Camille is.
I never knew what it was, yeah.
And so, like, if you're listening and you don't know, Camille is kind of shorthand for, like, an overdramatic, over-the-top, gut-wrenching death scene. So, you know, the movie Camille, at the end of Camille, she has tuberculosis and she dies and it's Greta Garbo and it's just an over-the-top death scene. So anytime that's referenced, that's what that means.
But Potter uses that same line in season 8. Season 7. Season 7, when Winchester is sick and he's like hocking up a lung and stuff like that and he makes these gross sounds and you hear Potter say, courage, Camille. So they got some mileage out of that one. So yeah, Long John Flat, it's a silly show. It's better than I remember it. When I wrote the synopsis for the Aftermath blog, I remembered being kind of dismissive of it. But when I watched it over again, it really is just that one scene with Radar that I'm like, oh, come on, what is that? But the rest of the episode is actually pretty solid. So I'm glad you came on to talk about it because it was fun to see just such a nice, silly show. And again, I always enjoy any show where Trapper is angling against Hawkeye. I always find that very funny because Hawkeye knows he's being swindled by Trapper and vice versa, but they go along with it anyway. That's the kind of pals they were. And I find that fun to watch.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, Sean, thank you once again, man. You were just on Fire and Water a couple of days ago, and I always enjoy talking to you. This has just been terrific, and I appreciate you coming on this season to talk about some of your favorite MASH episodes.
Absolutely, anytime.
All right, well, we're going to have to definitely have you back for season 2 when we gear up for that. And so, again, thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to find back episodes of the show, go to the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. Also, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes and on Stitcher and any other podcast platforms. And we were always talking about MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH4077cast. So until next week, that is all.
Go get Nurse Meadows. We're cutting him open.
Just because he stole your underwear?
Will you go?